Welcome to the Wild and Free podcast, episode 67. I'm Ainsley Arment, and this week we're talking with author and podcaster Tish Oxenrider about hybrid homeschooling and her new book, Shadow and Light, on how to slow down and enjoy the holiday season.
And I've had many Christmases in the past where I want my tree down by, like, you know, December 27th or 8th, and I want the decor put up because I'm ready for a clean slate. Well, when we do it like this, we purposely keep our tree out till January 6th. So that's when we watch a lot of the movies, bake a lot of the cookies, have a lot of the gatherings, and it makes it feel much more Christmassy and drawn out instead of like one day that we're trying to make as magical as possible and then we're exhausted.
We also have an exciting offer for the Wild and Free content bundles happening this week only. So grab a cup of coffee and join us on the front porch. Let's get started. . 2020 isn't exactly what we thought it would be. We never could have foreseen a global pandemic, a bitterly divided country in an election year, and so much heartache in the midst of it all. But if there's anyone who can handle foiled plans, it's a wild and free mama. The famous boxer Mike Tyson once said, "Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face." It could also be said that everyone has a plan until they're forced to shelter in place. If there's anything that 2020 has taught us, it's that living is not for the faint of heart. But that's what we do as homeschool mothers. We start out with a plan for what we'll do each day. Morning time, math lessons, read alouds, science. But whether those things actually happen is dictated by a number of factors outside of our control. Bad moods, inclement weather, sickness, a belligerent babe on the hip. Our great challenge is not what we accomplish each day, but how we respond when our plans go awry. Most often, the first thing that comes to our mind is that we're failures. We assume this only happens to us, that other moms are teaching Latin and calculus to eager students, while our toddler is dancing in his own pee and our fifth grader is boycotting math yet again. We know it's silly, but there we sit, wallowing in our despair until we're ready to quit. This self-imposed guilt is often compounded by a simple question that's posed by a well-meaning spouse, a relative, or even a curious clerk at the grocery store. So, what did you accomplish today? Dear friend, let me be the one to tell you that you are not required to give an account for every bad day you experience. We don't measure our results by a checklist or a to-do list. We measure our results by the lives we are nurturing. The author Jess Lehrer once said, "Your children are not things to be molded, but people to be unfolded." You cannot possibly rise each day. Love your children, educate them the best you know how, and rise again only to do the same and be anything less than a success. You may not see the fruit one day from now, or even one week. Months may go by of pouring into these fertile souls without so much as a daisy springing up. But flowers bloom in their own time, each in their own season, according to their unique design. You're going to make mistakes. Your kids will disappoint you, and you will most definitely disappoint your kids. You're going to have days when you can't see the good and you're going to wonder if you made a mistake. But don't give up. Don't grow weary in doing good. Creating a life together is messy, but oh, so worth it. Whether it's 20 minutes or 20 years, you will never regret the time spent together. This year has marked the beginning of new things for each of us, for this community and the world. My prayer is that we would not allow the brokenness of our past keep us from a redeemed tomorrow. So here's to foiled plans, disrupted dreams, and things we never saw coming. Our history may be filled with failure, missteps, and mistakes, but our heritage can be a legacy of love. One day, our children will look back and remember that their mother wasn't perfect. But they will also remember that she loved them well. Tish Oxenrider is widely known for her family's decision to take a year off and travel the world. It confirmed her suspicion that a passport is truly a portal for the world's greatest textbook, the actual planet and all her inhabitants. She documented the journey in her popular book, At Home in the World. Since 2015, when they returned, Tish has gone on to write three more books, start a podcast, and become a popular blogger and conference speaker. She recently sat down with Jennifer Pepito to talk about hybrid homeschooling, teaching English to high school students, and her new book, Shadow and Light. Let's listen in.
Thanks for joining me today, Tish.
Thank you for having me. It's great to talk to you.
I'm so excited to talk to you because you are one of those families who have done all kinds of schooling situations. And I think that that is very kind of a big factor for a lot of people this year is that many people are trying something new. And you are one of those people who have actually tried all kinds of different school situations. So I wanted to just have you talk a little bit about kind of hybrid schooling and what you're doing with your high school student.
Yeah. Yeah. We are definitely year at a time, kid at a time with our kids in terms of education. So my kids are now roughly fifth grade, seventh grade, and 10th grade. So I'm kind of in that messy middle, slightly older, you know, into high school now. And what we have found that's worked best with us pretty much since we came back from our year of travels is hybrid schooling. But really, it's still homeschooling. Like officially, according to the state of Texas, we homeschool. It's just that we go to a co-op that is 3 days a week, and it is much more involved than your typical co-op, you know, where everyone just kind of tosses out a class that it might like to take and just see what happens. It's much more systematic with an end game in mind, and it follows something called the Acton model. So for the past 3 years, I have been teaching high school English at this co-op. And this is my first year. I'm actually teaching two levels of high school English plus a leadership class. So I'm technically teaching three classes on 2 days a week at this co-op. And I absolutely love it. I never would have guessed that I would like teaching teenagers literature as much as I do. One surprising thing, I guess, is that it's helped me become really a better writer and a better human. It's given me an added depth and dimension to my life I didn't know I needed. And it's kind of given me a renewed energy and interest in this age group, the teenagers that we have in our lives. And so it's been a real blessing, honestly, teaching these kids the classics, the greats, and teaching them to write well. Although I use the word teaching, but we call ourselves guides at our co-op because it's much more sort of a reverse Socratic method of teaching with lots of question and answering. But yeah, it's a highlight of my week being with these teens.
I love that. And you know what's interesting? I think a lot of moms get really hung up on teaching high school to their own homeschool students. They start to get scared. And that is when a lot of moms opt for public school just because they don't feel like they can handle it. Did you have any of that apprehension when you got started teaching this high school class?
I did maybe the first few weeks, but it didn't take me long to see the benefits. And the reason is because, well, first of all, I've always been more of an older kid mom. Yes, I love the babies, but I really love it when you can start having real conversations with kids. So it didn't take me long to realize, oh, so much of what these kids are craving is just good conversations and mentoring. They want mentors in their lives who can model what it looks like to be a lifelong learner, a lifelong reader, and a lifelong writer. And I can do that. So it didn't take me long to realize, oh, I'm not here because I have all the answers or I need to have all the answers. I'm here to model what it looks like to be someone who has a posture of wanting to become a better reader and writer for my entire life. And so that's what I do. I mean, of course, I since learned a whole lot about the trade in terms of what to read, how to interact with the kids, and how to teach them writing skills that matter. I mean, honestly, give me upperclassmen English any day over first grade learning to read or the grammar stage of conjugating verbs and things like that. I love these older kids.
One thing that I really appreciate that you said is that teaching our children isn't so much about knowing everything. It's about having an attitude of learning. And I think that applies to any age. You know, if we can approach homeschooling with this excitement that, hey, we are still learning, just because we're adults doesn't mean that we have to know everything or that we have to stop learning, but we can approach it almost on the same level with our children.
That's right. That's right. And so much of this is, you know, reading books that I want to read anyway, because they're good for me, or even if I have read them, I want to reread them. And so I read alongside my students. I never assign a book and then just sort of, you know, keep my distance and then show up and, oh, what did I remember about this book from when I was 20 in college? I'm reading just alongside with them. I get the feeling of, gosh, this is hard or long, or, you know, what it feels like to be sucked into a story. So, yeah, it's very much coming alongside them.
I love that. One of the things that I've found as a homeschool mom of high school students is it really does help to homeschool in community at that point, mm-hmm. because it's nice to have that accountability. What do you feel like about the different ways that you've homeschooled over the years?
Yeah, I am 100% with you. You know, my oldest, my 10th grader, she's actually an introvert. And sometimes she even struggles with getting too much social time as a homeschooler. And so for us, this 3-day a week co-op of doing it in community ends up being just the right amount. Like, I don't think we would seek this out. I'm an introvert as well. And she and I sometimes say, I wish this was 1 day a week, but it's good for us to get this 3 days a week of people time. And then the rest of the week, the other 4 days a week where we can be home, recharge, rejuvenate, get work done, you know, go into deep work mode. Because so much of the way we learn as we get older has to do with kind of almost like trying it out on each other. You know, she and I could read a great book together and discuss it, but what about in a group of six people, you know, who might have different perspectives, different experiences reading a particular book, who might have different insight that they wouldn't have had otherwise, that I wouldn't have had otherwise. I learn from these kids all the time. So yeah, I'm a big fan of doing this in community because I need it more than because I crave it. And yet I'm so glad it's not full time because I need these days to recover at home.
Yeah, I could tend to just isolate us as a family because it's so nice to be cozy up in our home. But I do feel like we grow so much when we are homeschooling a community, whether it's a Wild and Free group or a co-op, just in some way being with other families and letting them speak into our lives and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about is the season of Advent. You have a book coming out that I'm so excited about called Shadow and Light. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it's about creating Advent traditions. And is it kind of more for moms or families? How would you describe it?
Well, it's a guidebook. So it's not necessarily addressed to a particular person, but it's not a children's book, if that's what you mean. It is for anybody, any adult who wants to have a life-giving, open and go, methodical, slow approach to Advent, whether it's with their family or whether it's on their own. So I wrote it purposely so, you know, someone who is single without kids or perhaps would rather just have something on their own could get just as much out of this as reading to your, you know, 5-year-old, because this is very, I don't want to say it's not bare bones, it's very rich and meaty, but it's very simple. The reason I created this is because as a mom, I couldn't find this thing that I was looking for. I love Advent. I love the historic liturgical approach to Advent. And yet everything I found out there was either too, I don't want to say simplistic, but it was too geared towards younger children, or it was so long and you know, dense in theology that it was too heavy. I needed something a little bit in between, something open and go that if we had to skip a few days, we wouldn't be, quote, behind. And yet it was about the ancient practice of Advent and not necessarily just, yay, are we getting excited about Christmas? Here we go. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That's just not the mom I am. So I basically wrote what I couldn't find.
When the days feel long, when the mud won't wash off, when no one is listening, when the kids are bickering and you're buried in laundry, remember to breathe. Remember to smile. Remember the good. Remember the laughter from a failed science experiment or the magic of a read aloud. Remember the abundant kisses of your toddler or the rare hug from your teen. Remember the way they made lunch together or fed the dog for once. Remember the love and passion that birthed this journey in the first place, and just breathe again. What a beautiful home school you're creating. Friends, I wanted to share a special opportunity that's happening this week only. If you subscribe to the Wild and Free content bundles by the end of October, you'll get access to this month's bundle, Outdoors, last month's bundle, Fairy Tales, and the new Friendship bundle when it launches on November 1st. That's three bundles in 1 week. Not only that, but as a subscriber, you'll get access to the recordings from our recent Wild and Free simulcast when they become available on our membership site next week. You can watch talks from Sally Clarkson, Julie Bogart, Rochelle Baburna, Amber Johnston, Elsie Uticello, Tony Weber, Greta Eskridge, Leslie Martino, and yours truly. And if that weren't enough, if you sign up this week, we'll also put a welcome kit in the mail that includes your first issue of the Wild and Free monthly magazine. But this is your last chance to get all the goodies. To take advantage of this special offer, go to bewildandfree.org/bundles. Now back to Tish Oxenreiter.
Well, I've been a big fan of another Advent book called All Creation Waits. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, part of the objective of Advent is just to have a little bit more reflective time where we settle into a quieter season. And I think that as, you know, especially when moms have young children, it can be hard to find time for reflection or to be a little bit more still and quiet. But I feel like the benefit to our children when we do find that is so immense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, Advent, even the meaning of the word, it's all about arrival. And so it's so much more about a posture than it is about checking the boxes of certain things to do. It's not about, I mean, yeah, there are gifts given to us, like candles we can light, music we can listen to, art we can look at. But it's not really about making sure you do all these things. It's about having a certain mindset. And the mindset of expectation, waiting on something, is both naturally, you know, I don't want to say easy, but it comes naturally to a season like Christmas, but it's not very easy in our culture that wants everything now. And so the gift of Advent is that it gives us permission to do honestly the thing we want to do, which is slow down and actually savor the season a little bit more. And so that to me is what I would want in something like an Advent guide, not more things to do, but permission to slow down and be the way I want to be anyway.
So tell me, how did you do Advent with young kids or when you guys were doing your round the world trip? Because I think sometimes we think that Advent can only be done when everything is already in our lives kind of smooth, and to add in one more, you know, long sort of process or long a kind of a ritual can be hard when we feel like we're already so overwhelmed with the cares of young children.
Well, when we first started practicing Advent, I honestly didn't really even know what it was, because the only association I had with it were those countdown calendars. You know, the ones you see in grocery stores with the,
yeah, kind the of, chocolate ones.
The mediocre chocolate. Yeah, exactly. And so that's all I knew about it. I thought it started December 1st, and all you do is just count down and get more and more excited about Christmas. And when I realized realized that, oh gosh, no, Advent has been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, and that this is a practice done by many people before me to anticipate the start of something. You know, Advent is the start of the liturgical calendar. So in a way, it's the church's new year, that it is so much more about slowing down instead of kind of, it's almost like getting on an off ramp than it is getting on an on ramp. That at the time when my kids were little, I really did think it was adding more to my plate. And so I wanted to be the fun mom. You know, I wanted to be the mom that had something planned for the kids every day during December, because who doesn't love Christmas? And so I would start by doing this calendar where we would flip over the card and it would give us something to do that day. And I would try it by making it something we would do anyway, you know, not just piling on the things, but, you know, it would be some kind of craft or it'd be some kind of movie we would watch. Well, it didn't take long for me to burn out from that, because I don't want to be fun every day. You know, I just want to be a person and I want to enjoy the holidays as well. I'm not a super crafty mom. I don't mind providing the craft supplies for those who want to do that, but it just felt like it was giving me so much of a burden. Then I tried to do the Jesse tree, which is this kind of tradition,
right, we've done that in years past. Mm-hmm.
It's found a resurgence the past like decade or so. The problem I had with that, you know, it's where you read from the biblical story of creation to the birth of Christ a little bit every day, and then you put an ornament that reflects that on a separate tree. The problem I had with that is that you have to go in chronological order, and if you miss some, you become behind. Well, everyone knows during the holiday season, our schedules can be pretty full. You've got some kind of office holiday party or some sort of added event. And if you have to skip a day, and then maybe you skip a second day because it's gotten late, and then before you know it, you're like 5 days behind, and it becomes a burden. It starts feeling like a chore. And so I didn't want something like that. But that's how we did Advent those first few years, when I really wanted to be a family that did Advent, so that by the time we did our round the world trip, the entire gift of the holidays felt like a pause button on that trip. And we loved it because we, you know, we were living out of backpacks, so we didn't really do gifts. We kept stockings really simple. We were in the Southern Hemisphere, so we were, for us, enjoying just a flipped, you know, calendar. And that was part of the
time
fun.
Of it was being around a Christmas tree.
Exactly. It was the height of summer. And so for us, it was just a really nice to hit the reset button, a really nice time. And so when we came back, that's when we started thinking about, or when I started thinking about, how do I really want to do this Advent thing in a way that's life-giving to all of us?
Yeah, that's good. One of our favorite Christmases ever actually was spent in Assisi, Italy. And we I'd smuggled a couple, maybe a book for each child. I mean, the minimalist of Christmas presents. But because it was in a new place and everything was so much less, it felt like more. It was an interesting concept. I think sometimes we think that more will make the bigger impression, but often it's one small special thing in the midst of a season that makes it really stand out.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, the holidays give us so much of a sensory experience. There's so much good music, good art, good smells, good sounds that we really just need to tap into those sorts of things, because at least when we're trying to make our holidays, quote, magical for our kids, because kids naturally have the ability to see things, you know, through a view and a posture of expectancy anyway, that we don't need to force that on them. All we need to do is provide kind of a backdrop for them to then experience the expectation that's native in them. And so to me, that's what I've learned about Advent. Doing less truly is more, because it gives the kids the freedom to experience the way they want to experience it, not how I force it on them as their mom.
Yeah, that's really special. And I think that, you know, as we make some kind of family traditions around Advent, and as we insert these special rituals into our lives, what does it change about your new year then?
So the new
the way the holidays work truly is Advent is the four Sundays before Christmas, right? It doesn't always start on December 1st. This year, for example, in 2020, it starts November 29th. And so you've got these 4 weeks leading up to Christmas that give you permission to really slow down to where then Christmas actually starts on December 25th. It doesn't end on December 25th. And then we get the 12 days of Christmas from that. I mean, we're talking in the historic calendar. So Christmas, technically, Christmas tide is December 25th to January 5th. And then it ends with Epiphany on January 6th. So that obviously goes, you know, right during our typical new year of January 1st. And so to me, what this has done is it's prolonged the holidays, but in a way that doesn't burn me out. Because I'm holding back just a little bit during those 4 weeks of Advent so that those 12 days, those almost 2 weeks of Christmas become truly much more of a celebration. I've had many Christmases in the past where I want my tree down by like, you know, December 27th or 8th, and I want the decor put up because I'm ready for a clean slate. Well, when we do it like this, we purposely keep our tree out till January 6th, and we channel a lot of the Christmassy things we held off on doing in early December to this particular season. So that's when we watch a lot of the movies, bake a lot of the cookies, have a lot of the gatherings, and it makes it feel much more Christmassy and drawn out instead of like one day that we're trying to make as magical as possible and then we're exhausted.
Right. Or I think for some of us, myself included, I start right after Thanksgiving. And then for sure, by December 26th, I'm like, okay, let's start planning the new year and cleaning the house up. I'm done.
Yeah. Which I, you know, I'm a big fan of New Year's. I always love that clean slate, new year, new you kind of thing. So I don't necessarily shy away from all the stuff. And, you know, I tell people in the book and in my own life, not to be a purist about this. It doesn't mean you absolutely cannot do anything Christmassy during Advent or that, you know, you have to reverse your calendar and expect everybody in the world around you to behave as such. But it just means it you know, the liturgical calendar is a gift. It's not a burden. It's not giving us one more thing to do. And so by leaning into it, we're allowing ourselves to slow down and not feel so rushed. And so a lot of times I do a lot of those things people want to get done on January 1st. I do them like mid-January to end January. I almost kind of have like this new year month in January, which I love. And, you know, slowly decorate and then slowly undecorate. To me, that's just life-giving. And it you know, it also decreases that tendency for kind of the mental and emotional letdowns we get during the holidays because, I don't know, it allows us. I mean, I tell people I celebrate Advent because I love Christmas, not because I want to do away with Christmas. I love Christmas so much, I want to have Advent.
Right. And I think that that is one of the beauties of being a wild and free homeschooler is that you can sort of dabble in different traditions. You know, I know some families do Jewish feasts, some families celebrate Kwanzaa. There's so many different ways that we can express our own family's cultural heritage in every holiday. And I love that you as a family have sort of dabbled in Advent until you found the groove that was right for you and kind of inserted that into your family holiday schedule.
Yeah. And we don't do the same thing every single time. I mean, our kids look forward to, you know, the beeswax candles we roll every year and the certain types of music. And I mean, just like everybody, we have our own traditions, but we're not purists about it. Our kids grow and change. And, you know, we have each different personalities. Some of my kids are super crafty, some hate crafts. And so We keep it pretty open-handed and we love learning new ways of doing things all the time. So we're continually adding more and taking away some. And we're just kind of doing what we want to do, you know, and I think that's all the more pertinent this year in 2020 when things are so different than they normally are, that making our home base this holiday season becomes so life-giving. You know, it becomes something that truly everybody in the family can find solace and rest and hope.
Mm-hmm. That's so good. And so in closing, can you just tell me, you're so good at collecting music playlists. I follow you on Spotify for that. Tell me just like one favorite Christmas song, a favorite Christmas book, and a favorite Christmas piece of art, if you can remember.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, so I will say that one of the fun things about Shadow and Light is that it has an accompanying website that has an entire list of art and an entire list of music, like the Spotify playlist I have, that people can use, because I have like day, you know, for example, 12, I would have you, you know, do your short reading. And then if you want, you can listen to this particular song that I mentioned and then listen or look at this particular art. And the reason is because that's the kind of person I am. I love music and I love art, and that enriches my holidays. You don't have to do that, of course, but I'm just telling you that because some people might be thinking about, well, this sounds great, but I don't have the time to like go and find everything, you know? Okay. So with that in mind, I'm a big fan of, well, all sorts of art, but there's one in particular that I think of. There's a man named Fritz Eichenberg. He was big in the 1930s into the 1940s in New York when the Catholic social movement really took away with Dorothy Day. And he was an artist, and he did this particular type of printing. And there's this art called Christ of the Breadlines that I absolutely love, that some people might not necessarily associate with the holidays because it's not your typical nativity scene with, you know, all the animals around and the stars shining. It depicts Christ as a homeless person standing in line along with other homeless people. And it shows to me the embodiment of what Advent is, which is recognizing Christ coming to earth and becoming one of us, literally God becoming flesh. And so I love that piece of art. I look at it all the time. And it's like an instant reset button on my kind of mindset, I guess you could say. Yes. And then as far as music goes, yeah, I'm currently looking at my Shadow and Light playlist right now because there's so much Advent music I love that's maybe not necessarily specific to what you would think as Christmas carols, even though there are some of those. I would say one that I really and truly love would probably be a song called Canticle of the Turning. It's an old song, and it's about expectation. It's about what we're waiting on and arrival. And, you know, I think it's just an old folk song that many people, you know, probably knew many moons ago, and then we've forgotten, and then some artists have dusted off. So that's on the playlist as well. And then as far as a book goes, I love holiday themed books. You already mentioned All Creation Waits. That's one that we read every year as well, because I love nature and the outdoors, and that's kind of a gift. So I'm going to pick two other ones, maybe on two different ends of the spectrum in terms of kids' ages. So the first one is, I almost feel like it's a cliche, but I'm an English teacher, so I get to, and that's The Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. So many of us know that story because of the movies, but we haven't actually read it. And I highly recommend reading it maybe every couple of years, maybe even every holiday. It's actually short. It's not a very long novella. It's in five staves or chapters, and there's so much rich. I mean, Dickens is such a great wordsmith, and there's so many good one-liners. It's funny. It's got so many rich, I don't want to say comebacks, but, you know, he was such a social commentator that what that book did for Victorian Christmas in terms of historically and socially is so important that it's worth reading at least once. I think all of us need to read it. So, yeah. So I'm going to say that. And then there's another book. Absolutely. It's a picture book called 100%. Christmas Farm. I need to think. Maybe you could look up who the author is. I can't remember it. But it's a picture book that we still read as a family because we all love it. And my oldest is, you know, going to be 16 soon. And it is a sweet story about this woman who starts a Christmas farm, and she has to think 10 years in advance because that's how long it takes to have them be ready. It's by Mary Lynn Ray. Just looked it up. And then about her next door neighbor, a little boy who starts helping her for the next 10 years. Grow these trees and then start selling them. And it's just such a sweet, calming, restorative, nature-centric Christmas picture book that we love. So that's one we pull out every year.
Well, that's amazing. And that's one that I have not heard of yet. And there's so many amazing Christmas book lists that go around Wild and Free. So I was like, yes, a new book.
A new
amazing.
Something.
Yes.
I know. I'm with you.
Yeah, well, it's been so much fun to chat with you, Tish. I am excited to read Shadow and Light. And I've been a member of your Books and Cranny for a little while, and that's been so fun to learn from you and get insight and chat with other moms about books and the things that we love. So thanks for taking the time to chat with me on Walden Free today.
Well, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Tish. Friends, don't forget about our special offer happening this week only. Subscribe to the Wild and Free content bundles by the end of October to get access to 3 bundles in 1 week and the talks from our recent Wild and Free simulcast. We'll put a special welcome kit in the mail when you do. Check it out at bewildandfree.org/bundles. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week for the Wild and Free podcast.